The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
As we expected, it's Tuesday. Hope you had a good one, and we're going to do some things tonight that will be very interesting to me and most of you, I'm sure. We're going to start off with a visit from our friend George Filer of Filer's Files fame and other things as well. He is a military veteran, major, U.S. Air Force. He is retired, also one of the world's most respected UFO researchers and scholars, and puts out Filer's Files, a weekly, fully illustrated photographs, you name it, newsletter that you can get free, delivered to your electronic mailbox. And if you don't get these, even if you don't, let's just use the old cliche, believe, doesn't matter. This is fascinating reading. You hear from eyewitnesses, you get to read their accounts, and whatever it is that's going on up there is quite real. We just don't know who it is all the time, although many of us think we do. Hello, George. Welcome back.
Good morning or good afternoon.
Where are you? Are you in Azerbaijan?
I'm way over in New Jersey.
Yeah, but you're
New Jersey.
You're usually in New Jersey.
Right.
You make it sound like it's a surprise. You're right next to Lake Filer. I know where you are.
Right.
You have Governor Christie on one side, Lake Filer on the other side, and you're right in the middle.
Allegedly, he's going to be running for president here.
Well, he ain't going to be running very fast. I don't care how much weight he loses. He's making a lot of mistakes, apparently. It's all a fix, anyway. It's going to be Hillary against Jeb Bush. That's my call.
Is that right?
Yep.
Well, you never know.
No, strange things can happen. We can guarantee it won't be the creep in there now, though. All right, 3 more years of this stuff. So, if you go to rents.com or click on George's name and guests, you go right to his website, and you'll see what we're talking about. And at the top of headlines, I am assured that the latest editions of Filer's Files are up, and there they are. In the second block, issue number 46, 47, and 48. Almost done again, George.
All right.
Can you slow it down a little?
Pardon me?
I say, can you slow it down a little?
Oh, slow the year down?
Yes, we're already almost at 52.
Right. Well, I'm happy to get out of 13.
Nobody liked 13. Because I didn't like 12 much either.
I'm looking forward to a better year in 14.
Well, I see no reason to quash those hopes. Let's all hope that way. Maybe collective, unconscious, non-local projection will help something turn around. Okay, where would you like to start? You didn't bring a special guest tonight, did you? You always surprise me with this stuff.
Well, I did, but they can't reach him.
Oh, no, my intuition was right. They can't reach him because, do we know?
No, we don't know. I talked to him earlier today, and he was all excited.
Oh, is it an eyewitness or someone else?
Yes, he was an eyewitness to UFO. He had a very interesting story up at Clark Summit, Pennsylvania.
Good. All right, well, Brett will stay on it. Hopefully we'll be able to connect with him during the hour at some point. Let's all take a look at George's issue number 48 there in headlines and see what... He always has some very interesting feature material at the beginning of the newsletter each week. I don't know how you... That's a lot of work. I know how much work goes into this. I haven't sat and watched you, but it's a lot of work. And you've got a new look, a new format? Who redesigned this?
Well, I guess I did, but no.
You're not sure?
I do different things at different times. It's just myself, you know. I do have a new, or not a new webmaster, but a new website, which is getting lots of hits.
What is it?
NationalUFOCenter.com.
Uh-huh.
NationalUFOCenter.com.
Okay.
We don't have the kind of hit that you have, but we're up to over 4 million.
Good. Excellent. Very good. Congratulations.
A lot of people are interested in the subject.
Well, how can they not? How can they not? Okay, let's look at number 48 here. And starting at the top, ooh, it looks like a stamp collection. It is a stamp collection, sort of. What do you have going there, George?
Are you referring to President George Washington?
Okay, I'm looking at Filer's Files number 46, and I see...
46?
Okay. Yeah, see? Sorry, I wanted to start out with 46 and move to 48. Didn't make that clear. There's an interesting picture there over a volcano in Japan on October 31st. And if you've been following the Mount Popo volcano near Mexico City, you'll know they have a lot of interesting things photographed over that volcano. They have cameras trained on it all the time. Some of these things actually have gone down into the volcano, or at least appeared to have. Very interesting. Okay, do you want to go to 48 or is 46 okay?
46, all right.
Well, let's start with 46 and we'll waltz through that one.
You're talking about Professor Herman Oberth?
Herman Oberth, yes, that's the one.
He was generally considered the pioneer of rocketry. He was a German professor and pretty much developed rockets, before World War II and actually worked with Dr. Wernher von Braun and, in fact, was his teacher. And he's been very open through the years. He's passed away now, but for the years he said UFOs are real. There are about 50 observations known from the time before World War II.
Uh-huh.
The number of appearances increased. The Allies thought it was a German secret weapon, and the Germans thought it was one
ours.
Of the Allies.
Yeah.
That also was true with Japan. Since 1947, the reports of eyewitnesses increased considerably. It is said by English Air Marshal Lord Downey that there have been 10,000 reports by 1953. In other words, the number of reports has gone up quite frequently, and now we're getting that each year. The number of reports continually go up year after year. The appearances are usually described as discs, sometimes as balls or ellipsoids. It sometimes happens that these discs place one upon the other, the largest in the center, smaller towards the end, to form an object the shape of a cigar, which then flies away with high speed. Sometimes witnesses saw a cigar stop and untie into separate discs. And this is this gentleman saying that, in other words, one of the greatest rocket scientists in the world is saying, in effect, that UFOs exist and that there's plenty of reports from very high-ranking people like Lord Downey, who was the head of the RAF in the Battle of Britain and afterwards. In other words, he's a great man.
Yeah, it's remarkable because in almost every country, at the upper levels of science or the military, there are always people who do come forward sooner or later. It doesn't matter where you are. Very interesting. Oberth was a giant in the field of rocketry and science, just a remarkable man. Be back in just a minute with another remarkable man, our friend George Filer, so stay right there. It's interesting that the stamp, which is reproduced twice in issue number 46, showing Professor Hermann Oberth, is a Paraguay stamp, a Paraguayan stamp. A lot of Germans after the war did make it to South America and lived out their lives in places like Paraguay, primarily Argentina, some in Brazil, and other places as well to a lesser degree. But there were a lot of them down there. Many of them, of course, ended up here through paperclip. And if you've read the current story I have posted by Harry Cooper of Shark Hunters International, sharkhunters.com, where he elaborates on the story of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun making it to Argentina, and the fact that he wrote the first book on the issue. The big question people ask, George, is, well, if that were true, why weren't they apprehended down there? And the answer that Harry Cooper came up with is very interesting. He suggests that a deal was made that if the top Germans who could get out were allowed to get out, that they would be able to live their lives out in Argentina and South America quietly if there was an enormous influx. In other words, if we got the German scientific community, the majority of it, it would all have gone to the Soviets if we hadn't made that deal. And the Soviets would have had all the rocket scientists, all the jet scientists, the weapons and armament scientists. All the research and development would have gone to the Soviet Union, including the atomic weapons program. We had the bomb, yes. But we wanted the German science trust, and we got it, and that was the deal. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Interesting angle, anyway. Okay,
well,
go ahead,
paperclip,
please.
We certainly got a lot of important people.
We got a ton of them, yeah, tons.
And it's, matter of fact, I met some. And interestingly enough, kind of an unusual story, but it kind of fits in with what you're saying, is that I was only a teenager, went down to Florida with my best friend and his father. And his father had been a German, you know, lived in Germany, but saw the war coming and had left Germany before the war and came to the United States. But he was a very intelligent engineer and made false arms and legs and so on.
Right.
In other words, the early types of helping people walk at the who were wounded in action. So.
Yep.
But one of his friends had been a German scientist during the war who had come over and was actually a white saint. And we met this fellow, and he said that, well, he just came from White Sands, and he had an extraordinary experience that he and three other of his scientist friends were out walking along this ridge. And the way the ridge was set up, that you could walk, but only your head showed above the top of the ridge.
Uh-huh.
Just happened to be that way. And they looked down, and there was a saucer on the ground. And there were little men, what appeared to be, picking up rocks and things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they weren't discovered because, you know, only their heads shone, and they only looked every so often. And they watched them for an extended period, and apparently they saw them, or whatever the case was, they got back in the UFO and flew away. And he was telling me about this disc, and we're kind of making fun of him, but at the same time, you know, he's very serious German, and, you know, I saw this thing, and this exists, and so on. Well, it kind of developed my feeling that, you know, these things probably are real, that I had seen them as a child, and here's as a teenager, the fellow is very convincing that they exist.
Uh-huh.
Then he went back to the, you know, White Sands, and they told him that they had seen this disc and so on, and they said, no, you didn't, just forget all about it.
You didn't see a thing.
That's part of how they've kept this, you might say, secret all this time, is that anyone who sees it, they tell them to keep quiet. Sometimes they can be very forceful about it. But I thought it was interesting that here these German scientists that had seen the disc felt that they were real, and indicated that they had seen a crash disc in Germany that apparently crashed in Italy, I believe it was. And that some of their advancement of the German scientists was based on, you might say, back engineering and earlier disc that crashed, I think he said in 1938 in northern Italy.
Huh.
And that when, you know, when Mussolini and Hitler got together, that was one of the things that the Italians gave the Germans, at least gave them access to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these stories about the Germans building this shaped craft, certainly a lot of advanced craft. They had the first jet fighters in World War II that were fighting against our piston engines. Aircraft.
Now, let me ask you a question, being an Air Force veteran and aviator. If Hitler, I saw a documentary, it's out there, you can find it, maybe on YouTube, called How Hitler Lost the War. And one of the three pillars of his defeat was built with his World War I mentality about aircraft. He didn't understand that when he was shown the Messerschmitt 262, flying in 1941 or 42, that it could have swept the skies clean. It was an air superiority fighter that could not be touched. He wanted to turn it into a bomber to quickly fly across the channel, drop a bomb on some city in Britain, and fly back. And it so enraged Adolf Galland, the general of the Luftwaffe fighter forces, that he eventually quit. And Hitler had to go after him and talk him into coming back and say, okay, you can have it as your fighter, your air fighter. And he got it, but it was too late. They only had one squadron that was really operational. And I forget, they had an awesome tally of bombers in one day. They just couldn't be touched. It was a tremendous technological misjudgment on the part of the man at the top.
They can fly like 100 miles an hour faster than our fastest plane.
Yeah, exactly.
That story I've heard before. Certainly that the aircraft wasn't used effectively.
Not until late 44, early 45.
Yeah. And well, at the same time we were bombing and trying to knock out their aviation plants and so on.
Yeah.
It's generally not known as that they went underground.
They were inside of a whole mountain. They had it hollowed out, and they were making the 262s in there. And the other single jet fighter, which very few people know about, the jet was actually mounted above the cockpit. Very interesting looking. They call it the Salamander. They had, I've got a picture of an underground, enormous underground cavern with, it must be 50 or 60 of them, just about finished or in various states of completion. They 6 more months and things would have been different. The war still would have been lost. I'm not talking about the atomic aspect here, but technologically it would have been a much more difficult thing, because by 43, Germany was essentially in decline after Stalingrad, as most of you know.
Well,
okay.
They didn't have enough fuel and so on.
No.
The other part of that was that, sounds funny, but I used to have a TV program in Atlantic City.
You did?
A couple of years.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't find anything to advertise. So the Air Victory Museum, which is in Bedford, was building 6 ME-262 copies of the German jet.
Full size?
Full size with modern jet engines.
Yes. You're kidding. Did they finish any of these?
Pardon me?
Did they finish any of them?
Yes. And I used to try to sell them on the radio, on the TV program, for $1.5 million a piece.
What a story.
Unfortunately, I never sold one, but it was a neat program because it showed 262 flying. And, you know, buy one of these, kind of like your advertising that you see on TV.
That's wild. That's very, very interesting. We have to take a break. Hold on. I didn't know this. Very good. George Feiler, always got an interesting little wrinkle to present. We'll have more for you right after this. Don't go away. Okay, welcome back. Talking to George, and we're looking at Feiler's Files, issue number 47. A lot of interesting pictures there if you want to scroll down. You had a conference, a little get-together in New Jersey. It looks like it went very well.
Yes, it did.
Do you put that together yourself?
Well, I helped. But Dave Stinnett, I should probably have him on, Pat Marcatilio, that they did most work, frankly. And I suggested that they invite Linda Howe. I'm sure you know.
Sure.
It
looks like a good group was there.
Grant Cameron, he's the Canadian gentleman that follows what the presidents have to say, and Jose Escamilla, who has some wonderful videos.
Well, I've known Jose
videos,
for a long time.
NASA videos.
Uh-huh.
That if any person just looked at his videos and realized that he really hasn't done anything to the film other than put it together, they would believe in extraterrestrials, that they show objects and structures on the moon and on Mars that would convince anyone that we are not alone in the universe.
Is this his new film?
Yes.
Called Celestial, I believe.
Right. There's evidence out there for any reasonable person. For example, you know, if it was shown on the news, which I wonder if it really is the news anymore. But
it's not. It's a very good observation. And your point is, I think, well taken, because the average American, if they see something, now the average American, not our audience here, but the average American, the average person in this country, or almost any country, if they see it on the news or they see it on TV, well, it must be real. But if someone presents a video or a YouTube video or some other means of showing them data, like Joseph Skipper's work of the images on Mars that make no sense at all, except that they have been created by intelligent living beings, they'd say, well, it's not on TV, then it's probably not real. Or the government wouldn't lie to us, you know, that kind of thing. That just drives you nuts. I don't care about the cover-up. I really never have. It's asinine, it's laughable, it's ludicrous. Let them have their fun. I mean, you look at some, like Jose's work, you can look at his work. Look at Joseph Skipper's work. Look at your work and Filer's Files. And I mean, the evidence is simply overwhelming over time.
You know, the average American isn't dumb or anything. Stupid.
No, they're misinformed.
They're reasonably intelligent.
They're just lied to.
They have not received the information.
No.
They have not seen the evidence and the proof and so on. And that's partially what, you know, you and I are trying to do, show them the evidence that it exists. And it's from reasonable people. And one of the reasons I started doing Filer's Files was I had a good friend who was a 3-star general and a friend who was a millionaire that ran and owned the Air Victory Museum in Medford. And they said that UFOs, there's a bunch of nonsense to all that. And I said, well, you don't see the evidence. Any case, within a year, they said I could put, you know, proof of UFOs in the museum. And the fellow who had his own F-86 aircraft was building UFOs that could fly inside the museum. Kind of like, the point is that if you show the people the evidence,
right,
they almost anyone will start believing, so to speak.
You don't have to believe. You just have to see, and what it is what it is. And you see so much of what it is, after a while, you just, okay.
And there's thousands of pictures. We get,
yeah. You
know, 25 pictures or so every week. That some aren't the best, but some are very good. Even the Iranians are claiming they're changing UFOs. Of course, they might be ours.
Anything's possible nowadays. So Jose was there and he showed his trailer? Or did he show more of the film than that? Is this going to be a DVD kind of release, or is he going to try for a theatrical release?
It's a DVD. Yeah, I should probably.
I'll put a link up to his film on my site as well.
Okay.
And it's The Moon, filmed in full color using a backyard telescope and a $68 webcam. And the things that are sitting around up there are amazing. Oh, Aldrin and I forgot who else both claimed that they saw structures on the moon.
Well, I've talked to several.
Armstrong and Aldrin, that's right.
Yeah. Several of the astronauts, and they won't tell you anything publicly, but they'll tell you privately that they saw them.
That's right.
Or say, I can't tell you that I saw anything, but all my friends saw it.
All my friends did.
See, they signed a contract that they wouldn't admit to anything. So. And the contract is written apparently in a way that did not reveal that you saw anything. So they'll say, well, I didn't see anything, but all my friends saw UFOs and different things up there.
That's funny. Yeah, that's good. I ran a story about General Nathan Twining's 6 weeks before he passed. he told his son, Nathan Twining Jr., that Roswell was quite real, and one of the ETs survived. I think there were three dead, one alive, or something like that, and lived for 15 years. And he said that he had contact with the being and actually felt that they had become friends. An interesting story.
I talked to a major who claimed that he had met them. Now, this, I don't know if it's the same one, but they called him J-Rod. And
I don't know if that's the same one or not, but J-Rod was the name of one of them, yeah.
And that they became quite friendly. And he didn't feel that they were here to harm us or anything. As a matter of fact, the main message was, you've got a wonderful planet.
We had.
Planet Earth, and humans are messing it up. And, you know, we're not taking care of it environmentally. And be very careful of nuclear weapons, give all that stuff up, you know, nuclear power and so on.
Too late.
But there's much better ways. Well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hopefully they'll step in and do something. Maybe they've got technology that can reverse some of the damage. I would hope so.
Well,
but
they do seem to help from what I can determine.
Right. Okay, when we come back, we'll... you want to take a look at 48 or 47 next issue?
Doesn't matter to me, whatever you like.
Well, you're the chef. Which one do you want to look at? You think about it. We'll take a look at it when we come back. Okay. And talk a little louder for our listeners. They want to hear that voice. They really like your sound. Okay. We'll be back with Major Filer in just a couple minutes. Okay, welcome back. Let's get right back to Major George Filer. Okay, George, real quick, your special guest is here. Why don't you introduce him and let's find out what he has to say, and we're going to have to do this in about 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, special guest is George Welkine, and he had some exciting sightings of UFOs that he'll tell you about in a minute. Clark Summit, Pennsylvania.
Very good. Okay, George, hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I'm really, it's an honor to be on your show, and it's an honor to, you know, to be with George Filer. And
I second that.
He's quite an unusual fellow.
he's one of a kind. All right, George, we don't have a lot of time, so go ahead and let's jump right in and tell us your story.
All right. It really starts at about 1991, just about a couple of weeks before Christmas. So this is like the 22nd year anniversary of Clark Summit.
Uh-huh.
People were seeing lots of things flying around up at Clark Summit. And,
what state is this in, George, please?
Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, it's the last town on the last exit of the Northeast Extension of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, just below Binghamton, New York.
Uh-huh.
It's not that far from Philly. I was a member of the Wilmington, Delaware MUFON organization, just been a member for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And on January 15th, 1992, I got a call from a fellow member named Irene, and she said... Linda Moulton Howe told her that there was UFO activity up in Pennsylvania. Do you want to come with me? And I didn't know who she was. I wasn't sure, you know, what was going on. But, you know, basically she said, I said, why'd you pick me? And she says, well, you're your last name is Wolkine. There's no X, Y, and Z, so you're it. So I said, okay. So the very next day on January 16th, we went up in her Voyager car, and we went up to Dunmore, Pennsylvania, and my job was to get out in the snow. It was a blinding snowstorm.
Oh, fun.
To go into the garage and ask a couple of people if they'd seen a flying pumpkin.
Well, it makes perfect sense to me, George. What's wrong with you?
Well, that's what it was described. That's what Linda Moulton Howe told Irene, that it looked like a flying jack-o'-lantern. So
okay.
I did that and got the craziest looks, and I said, no, this ain't going to work. But to make a long story short, we checked in a hotel, and there was a guy at the counter, and I said, hey, I'm from the Mutual UFO Network. Are you seeing UFOs around here? And he said, sure, every night. I said, what? He says, yeah, we just go out after work and go watch. They just fly around Bald Mountain. And I said, well, do you know who I can contact? And he says, yeah, my cousin is a police officer, Sergeant Callie. I'll give him his phone number. So we went to Clark Summit. There was a Texaco station there, and I asked somebody, where's the phone? I called Callie up. He said, hi. I said, are there any UFOs here? And he said, oh, yeah, we got a guy who's photographing them. And he gave me his phone number, so I called him up. And I said, Gary, I hear you're photographing UFOs flying around Bald Mountain. And then he said the six words that changed my life. He says, I've got two on the ground.
And wow.
I said, whoa. So we jumped in the car. Now, it had been snowing on a blinding storm. Now it stops.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking for Newton Ransom Road. And three lights in a row go off. And I said, Irene, I think that's where the road is. So we went on the road. It was icy and snowy. And we were making a U-turn. And I was looking towards Bald Mountain. There were these three towers. And I see this big ball of light over the tower, and I said, Irene, look, what is that? And then it started moving towards us.
Is this daytime or nighttime, George?
No, is it nighttime? Nighttime.
Okay.
It's about
okay.
9 o'clock.
All right,
this
pitch black.
This thing is getting bigger and bigger, and I said, Irene, put the pedal to the metal. It's a UFO. We're going to get abducted. The tires are spinning, our heart is in our throats, and we're like, oh my God, now it's over our car, and we're going down the road, and we see two police cars coming our way with lights flashing. So I said, follow them, they got guns.
This is funny.
They turned up Terra Drive, and sure enough, we all wind up at Gary Steyer's house with two policemen, two police cars, me and Irene, and I get out of the car, and the UFO is over our head, stopped about 1,000 feet up. It looked like a big ball of white light.
So the group of you were right underneath this thing.
Yeah, now one cop wouldn't look. He was shaking. His hands were shaking so bad.
He wouldn't look up.
Wouldn't look. Sergeant Kelly said, welcome to Newton Ransom Township. And I said, what's the matter with him? He said, oh, he's not a believer.
Too funny.
Well, anyway, to make a long story short, Gary comes out, and we interview him. We've got a tape recording, and where he's telling us how this has been going on for like 5 weeks. And I said, holy cow. So we were out there in the cold, and we interviewed the whole family, and all of this wound up on a program called Sightings, which came out in February of 1993.
Yeah.
So everything was documented.
Uh-huh.
He had videotapes of the UFOs. And while we were standing there, I turn around. Someone yells, look at the mountain, look at the mountain. And I see this triangular craft. It had lights all around the triangle.
Uh-huh.
And it must have been bigger than a house. It starts taking off. It goes straight up in the air, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 feet, and blinks out. I'm just like, I can't, I think I'm
what
in
a show.
Movie.
What a show.
Yeah, what a show. So then someone yells, there's the pumpkin, there's the pumpkin. So I turn around again, and there is this, it looked like a jack-o'-lantern. That's the only way to describe it. It had lights for eyes and a row of lights for a mouth. And it went and did the same thing, and it just goes right out. So we stayed there from 9 o'clock at night till 1 in the morning. Now, the craft over our head didn't move.
All that time?
The whole time. The whole time. We're talking about 3 hours of seeing stuff. So we're tired. We wanted to go back to the hotel. We go back down Newton Ransom Road, and I look to the right. Now, it's all dark, and it was like a suburban neighborhood, little houses, you know, one-family houses.
Yes.
I see a plane. Now, it's like 16 degrees out, and it looked like an ultralight plane flying. So I stopped the car. I said, Irene, stop. There's something there. And then I got out of her van, and there was a 20-foot embankment going down in the snow. I go all the way down, and there it is, a craft, a flying saucer. It's 10 feet off the ground. I could have picked up a snowball and underhand tossed it. It made a humming sound. Now, it didn't look really solid. It looked like it was something coming into manifestation. There was just a row of lights. It almost looked like Christmas lights, about 30 feet wide, about 15, 20 feet high, and it's wobbling like a cork on the water.
Oh, the falling leaf motion.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm looking at it, and I'm going, gee, when does the death ray come out? I waved at it. And then it made a humming sound. It sounded like
This is daytime.
No, this is nighttime.
Still in the same. Okay, same night.
Yeah, same night. And I'm like, I didn't know what to do. I waved at it.
This is amazing.
I know it was amazing. It was awestruck. So it starts moving down the street, and there's nobody on the street because it's about 1:30 in the morning. And it just went over a house and then disappeared. So I get back, I climb up the snow, and I said, Irene, you're not going to believe what I just saw. She says, oh, my God. And I said, yeah. I said, it's Walkine's Law. When you see them, they see you. So we got back in the truck. We're going down the road. Now we're down State Street at Clark Summit. And then we see more stuff. There was a green light and a red light, and we didn't see a structure, but it moved right across the road about 60 miles an hour and disappeared. Then another one came. And by that time, we were exhausted. We got back to Delaware. Well, we got back to the hotel. The next day, we got back to Delaware. We called George Reynolds, who was the assistant MUFON director. And he went up Friday night, and he saw a UFO over his head. He actually saw a UFO over his head. It had like 20 white lights in a circle. So this was an amazing thing. The sad part about it was after we filed our reports with our local director, and we had a meeting with him, he turned against us, and I got a call saying that we had seen ball lightning, plasma.
Oh, my. You know, George, we're out of time, but I'd like to have you come back later in the month, maybe a week or two, with George Feiler. We'll go into this a little bit more in detail. This is a fascinating. What we just heard was a screenplay for a motion picture.
It changed my life, man.
Oh, sure. How could it not? That's a Spielberg screenplay, what I just heard in 10 minutes.
Wow.
Would you come back with George?
Sure, I'd love it. I'd love it. George supported this case, by the way.
Well, this is really important. We're going to go through this in more detail next time then. Promise
I'm
that...
I myself and talk to people.
Yeah, okay. Well, I promise you we'll work this out. George, I'll talk to you tomorrow or something. We'll get this set up. Okay? Thank you, George. very much for being on tonight. That was a great description of something that is indescribable.
Absolutely.
You did it wonderfully. And Major Filer, thank you, sir, and talk to you tomorrow. We'll get this set up.
Okay.
Thanks, George.
All right.
Okay. Wow. There you go. Okay, well, we'll get together here in a week or so and do this in more detail. That is spectacular. What do you say? Wish I could have been there. Sounds like one of those things where it's still freezing, 15 degrees or whatever he said, 1 in the morning, 1:30, and how could you see too many UFOs? They were tired. The emotional drain on somebody seeing all that, I can't even imagine it. Wow. Okay, be right back.